You are listening
to the Fly Fishing 97 podcast.
Yeah, it was good. We had another good episode at Tungkwa as well.
Okay.
Again, unfortunately, with my wife, she's the bearer of this story as well. But we were just learning how to do the dangle there.
Right.
So she was the one doing the dangle, and she caught that big 4 or 5 pounder that went under the boat, came up the other side, and then when that fish jumped, it actually smacked her right upside the head.
I'm serious.
So it hit her in the head. It landed in the boat. It jumped. It jumped back out of the boat.
Wow.
She kept on fighting the fish. I ended up netting it, brought it into the boat, and it jumped out of the net and back into the water.
The Fly Fishing 97 podcast is powered by theflycrate.com, an online fly shop. Join the Quarterly Fly Club today, your source for all things fly fishing. And Wait For It Films. For action-packed fly fishing videos and camera-related content, check out Wait For It Films on YouTube or at www.thewaitcreativeco.com. And Broken Tippet Fly Company, blog and fishing apparel and accessories. Check them out online at brokentippet.com.
Theflycrate.com is your source for all things fly fishing. The Fly Crate offers a monthly fly club. We select patterns every month for your home waters. With membership, you'll receive flies created to match the hatch in your area, along with the Fly Crate's guide magazine, the convenience of having flies delivered right to your door, some sweet stickers. Discover new patterns and start stocking your fly boxes now. TheFlyCrate.com.
Here's your host, Mark Hopley.
Welcome to this edition of the Fly Fishing 97 podcast. Really happy you're joining us. We've taken a little bit of a hiatus, but the truth is we just got busy with day-to-day and really missing talking fly fishing. Now things are starting to open up in our neck of the woods, and we're going to say hello to one Chad Ivan out of Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada, a.k.a. Scooby Kona. He's an avid fly fisher, avid fly tire, spends a lot of time on Roche Lake in that area. But in the daytime, you'll find him in Kelowna. Chad, thanks so much for coming on the show today. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on here.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've been playing a little bit of telephone tag back and forth and your name has come up a lot over the years, and I know you're a pretty passionate guy. So I always like to kind of start from your fly fishing story right from the beginning, Chad. When did you first kind of find it? Like when did fly fishing first show up for you?
Well, it's a long story, you know, born and raised in Kelowna. You know, we have all the lakes around here, and my dad, he was a big fisherman when I was young. So, you know, he got me out on the lakes. You know, our favorite lake was Penask up on the connector. Started off, you know, trolling a fly behind a fly rod. For many years, dad didn't do much more than that. So that was kind of where it started. And, you know, as I hit my teens and my early 20s, it just progressed from there.
It's funny you mentioned Penask, because that's honestly exactly where, that's one of the first lakes I can ever remember hitting as a real young kid. And do you ever get up there anymore? You ever been that way? It's,
you know, I kind of just stayed away. You know, we fished some of the lakes around it. You know, we've started going into Boot and Vincent and stuff in the last 10 years, but yeah. I haven't been back into Penask.
No, me neither. And we tried a few years ago. There was a lot of blowdowns. There was a real good windstorm kicked through, and we got to within a few hundred meters of the lake, and it was locked basically. But I know you can go different ways in there, and it's a gem though, isn't it? Just an amazing lake to learn on.
You know, it was great, except, you know, we were going there before the connector went in, so
yeah,
it was like a 3.5 hour drive to get there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, we used to fish, what was it, Whitehead and all the headwaters chain up in that area. There's all kinds of little lakes. But Penask was always one that it was a beauty for sure. And I'm sure still is. And just for those that don't know, this lake has like never been stocked. It's where a lot of the brood stock comes from for the local hatcheries and whatnot. But true terrestrial feeders, aren't they? I mean, they love their insects up there.
That they do. You know, it was Grizzly King back in the day, and then to a black Spratly, and yep. You know, it was a lot of fun.
Fair enough. So let's talk influences, Chad. So sounds like your dad was a big part in that.
Yeah, he was. You know, and then just from there, you know, I had a kid, and Amy's her name, and she ended up going to school with Ken Woodward.
So I
met Ken about 10 years ago, and, you know, he got her into fly fishing, and that really opened my eyes up to the whole world of everything to do with it, with the crony fishing, the casting, all that kind of stuff. And he got me into fly tying around the fire one day. He was giving me a hard time because I didn't tie my own flies. So I took his words, and I went at it hard.
That's awesome. That's pretty good influence right there too. Anybody else come to mind, you know, over the past few years? I'm sure the likes of Chan and Rolly, those names kind of always come up.
Yeah. All the standard guys like that, but you know, you meet a lot of people on the lakes too. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've had so many good conversations out on the lakes with guys, and you know, you can't name just one. There's so many, you know. I got my buddies over at Interior Fly Fishing there, and you know, they help out all the time. They're a bunch of good guys.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, I ran into a couple of them on the lake yesterday. Those guys, They are everywhere right now. Every time I turn around, I'm seeing pics of their boats, whether it's on Stump or they're definitely covering some ground. And I see Brandon's working with them now, which is awesome.
Yeah, I haven't met Brandon yet, but I've chatted with him a few times over Instagram and Facebook and stuff. So
yeah, great.
Interesting
dude.
To get out there.
We actually got him on the show coming on tomorrow. So,
perfect.
Yeah, well, let's talk about your tie-in, because I know that's a big part of what you're doing, and I know you're tying up some beauty chironomid patterns. I've seen some. Haven't had the luxury of fishing them yet, but talk to me about your tying journey, Chad. How did you first get into the tying end of things?
Well, like I said, I was sitting around the campfire at Tungkwa, and Ken came over and, you know, was there to see me, Amy, another buddy of mine, and his son went to school there as well. And we just got talking about it, and he kind of opened my eyes to it. So I kind of went home, and then COVID hit, and everybody was stuck in their house during COVID, and started watching the videos and pretty much self-taught myself how to tie.
That's awesome. So what kind of advice are you tying on these days?
I started just with a hand-me-down, and then my wife bought me a Dan vise that I used. I pretty much wore that one out, and now I went and got a Renzetti Traveler, and that's where I'm at now.
Yeah, that's what I got too. I love those vices. They're simple and effective, and they travel well too, right, if you want to take it to the lake, which I'm sure you probably do on occasion.
I do, actually. In the cabin, I have it's got its own tying desk and light and everything, and it's well stocked up, so anybody that's there is welcome to fly at it and use any materials they want and tie up that special fly.
That's funny, because every time we go on a trip, I'll tell you, the hardest time I have is knowing what tying materials to take. You're looking at your bench at home, and it's like, man, if only I could just transport this whole thing in time, which is not realistic, but... Yeah, it's hard to know what to take for sure. What are you fishing on that lake? Because I know you're on Roche Lake. I know you got a cabin on Roche Lake that you do rent out. We'll talk all about that. But what have you learned from fishing your home waters, if we can call them that up there?
You know, patience is a big one. You know, there's some days are super good, some days are slow. Mm-hmm. You learn to move around, you learn to just find the areas.
Yeah, it's a beauty lake, for sure. And I know it had a kill a couple years ago, but it looks like, by all accounts, this winter's been, you know, pretty good. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, so I actually talked with Phil today. He's our maintenance manager up at the resort there. Mm-hmm. And he said lake's about half off now. No crows, no floaters, no nothing. It looks like it definitely did okay this winter.
Good stuff. So yeah. I assume a lot of times you're probably just walking down to the boat launch to put the boat in, but If you had to drive to the water, what's playing in the truck en route?
Well, country. Country's a big part. You know, if it's not country, it's into the heavy metal, AC/DC and Metallica and stuff along those lines.
Mixing it up a bit. I like that.
Yeah.
What about a go-to pattern for you, Chad? Is there one pattern that you reach for more often?
You know, a basic black leech with a red bead seems to work almost everywhere to get going.
Yeah, you know, and it's almost like I forget every year, but at the beginning of the year, you're thinking hatches, you're thinking crannies, but then the reality is the water temperature is not quite there when we first hit it, right? And it's like, they're not ready for those crony patterns for the most part. Like you say, those searching patterns, those leeches always seem to kind of be money.
They just seem to work. You know, if I'm by myself and I'm running the two rods, I'll put a, you know, a half ASB light green crony on one and a size 18 and then the leech on the other one and kind of search from there.
What do you fish out of these days? What kind of boat are you in?
So I got two boats. You know, my Roche Lake boat is a 16-foot Legend V-hull, but it's got the floor in it. It's got the casting platform up front, 30 horse on it. So when the lake blows up, I can handle it with the big boat. Mm-hmm. And then I got a 10-foot Marlin that sits on top of my side-by-side, and I use that to go to all the little lakes around Roche.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. And there's lots of lakes up on that plateau for sure. We don't want to name all the names, but I know there's some good ones. Is that an area that you've got to know really well? Obviously you're spending a lot of time up there. Tell us, like our listeners, a little bit about that area. What makes it so special?
So the whole Roche area, there's 7 or 8 trophy lakes that are, you know, within 45 minutes of Roche. You go from open country to rangeland all the way into the treed forest with, you know, lakes all around, so you can kind of pick what you want. You know, Stump Lake is close by. Yep. You know, there's big fish in there, as everybody knows, right down to little tiny swamps that you wouldn't even think had fish, and they'll have some of the biggest fish you've seen.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. Where do you get your fix fly fishing wise when you're not out there? So by that I mean, you know, is it at the Vice for you? Is it on social media? Is there, you know, are you hanging out at Trout Water? Where do you get your fill when you're not fishing?
Well, combination. You know, I love sitting at the bench tying, and you're always watching videos and stuff, learning how people are tying different stuff. And you know, even work, and you know, working construction, there's lots of guys around that fish. You know, one of my contractors is part of Interior, so you see him lots. And you go down to Trout. The guys down at Trout Waters they're unbelievable.
Yeah.
Some of them will give you some good info. Some keep it pretty tight to their chest, but it's always good conversation.
Yeah, it's a great shop for sure. Let's talk sports. Are you a big sports guy?
Yeah, I am. But mostly just hockey. I'm a Canucks fan.
Okay.
Diehard.
Well, they're looking better this year for sure.
Yeah, until you watch one of their bad games and kind of shake your head a little bit, but let's hope they pull it together for the playoffs.
Right. Tockett's got them. It looks like they're buying in for sure, but I'm with you. I'm a huge Canucks fan too. And it's like, you know, you'll watch 3 or 4 great games and then it's one, it's like, ooh, is this the same team? What is going on here? But, we're kind of used to that by now, are we not?
Yes, we are, unfortunately.
Oh, man. If you had to look at what brings you to the water, why do you think you spend all this time rather, you know, either at the Vice or on the water, chasing fins? What does it bring into your world, Jed?
You know, it just brings some calmness. You know, running a company with a bunch of guys has a bunch of stresses. You know, having a family with kids has some stresses, and it just gives you that place away from everything. No cell phone, you know, just calm. I actually prefer fishing by myself a lot, you know, with other people around in other boats, but I like to be by myself in my boat, do my own thing. No stress then. It's just quiet and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I get that. I know what you mean too when you say, you know, there's, it's nice to have company, but not always be immediate, right? So it's like there's a, I love it when there's maybe, and Roche is a perfect lake for that, when you get about six or seven people on a flat and you're all anchored up and everyone's into fish and you're kind of maybe trading patterns and stories. That to me is what I love about that lake.
Yeah, you know, we had an epic spring a couple of years ago when Brendan Morrison was up and I was there. I was in that line of guys and actually gave my spot up for Brendan to get into the line with everybody. And I went and fished kind of outside of them, but it was quite the day, man. There wasn't any time when three or four boats didn't have fish on. It was crazy.
Yeah. That was, it's real, real West Coast. I did watch that show and man, it looked, I think Trevor Tatarchuk was with you guys. Was he not?
Yeah, that was actually the first time I met Trevor, and that guy has a crony box like nobody's ever seen.
Oh yeah,
it is the most organized and full box. It's impressive.
Almost too many options. When I, you know, like I have a hard enough time picking from the patterns that I have, but when I look at some of these, it's almost like a suitcase of flies. It's like, where in the world do you start, right? Good stuff. So, let's talk work, man. So your day job, you're obviously in construction, masonry. Tell me about your day job and how you got into that.
So I've been a mason since I was 19. It was my grandpa and my uncle were both in the trade, and I had the opportunity to go up to Fort Nelson and take a job in a mill or start an apprenticeship in a trade. And you know, I was already with my wife at that time and, you know, we talked about it and up north wasn't looking too promising. So I started the apprenticeship and, you know, it went from there. I worked with my uncle for about 8 years after that. And then I worked with another mason for a while. And about 15 years ago, I went on my own and it's just progressed from there.
Best job you've ever had?
Pretty much the only job I've ever had. You know, I did a little bit in stucco, a little bit in cabinet making, but yeah, this was pretty much it.
Any jobs you can think of maybe, you know, after high school or whatnot that you went, man, I don't want to do this ever again. Did you have any of those?
The stucco laboring job, that was about as rough as it gets.
Yeah. What is working as a mason like? What's a big takeaway from that? Is that a real patient game? Like what does it bring into your world, if you will?
It has some different aspects to it. You know, we do a lot of natural stone,
right,
and that brings out the artisticness of you.
Okay.
So there's a lot of pride when you're done a job at the end of the day. It's a great trade for somebody that wants to see their work, you know, finished at the end of the day, because once you're done, that's on that house or that project for a long time. You know, it's not hidden. It's always open.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, there's a lot to it. And, you know, having employees now, I've got six guys and it's like having a team. They're a second family, really. You know, we're together every day and
that's cool.
It's a lot of fun. I've had as many as 10 at one time, and you know, things are slowing down a bit, so we're scaling back.
I was wondering if you feel that corner's coming though, Chad. It almost feels like we're kind of due here for maybe some interest rates to come down and some things to start moving.
I hope so. You know, this these high interest rates have definitely slowed things down.
Right.
I do see if they, you know, they've leveled off now, so that's really helped. But if they actually started to drop, I think things would pick back up.
Yeah, no, for sure. So let's get back to the watermen. So like in all your trips, all your times spent out and about chasing fins, have you had any bizarre things happen to you, any wildlife encounters or any weird and wonderful stories that you're like, man, you're not going to believe this actually happened?
So I had a couple. The best by far was on Penask. My wife caught a fish and was bringing it into the boat, and an osprey actually came right down, grabbed the fish beside the boat, took off with it, and she fought the osprey for the fish. And she won. She pulled that fish right out of that osprey's claws. So that was pretty exciting.
That is amazing. There used to be, well, it's a funny lake with lots of little kind of islands and there's some real hunting grounds for osprey up there for sure.
It was good. We had another good episode at Tungkwa as well.
Okay.
Again, unfortunately with my wife, she's the bearer of this story as well, but we were just learning how to do the dangle there.
Right.
So she was the one doing the dangle, and she caught that big 4 or 5 pounder that went under the boat, came up the other side. And then when that fish jumped, it actually smacked her right upside the head.
I'm serious.
So it hit her in the head. It landed in the boat.
Oh, no.
It jumped back out of the boat.
Wow.
She kept on fighting the fish. I ended up netting it, brought it into the boat, and it jumped out of the net and back into the water. it was crazy. I wish we had it on video, because
that's awesome. I talked to somebody that was fishing a lake up behind Summerland, and an osprey came down and picked up their fish out of the water and flew off with it. I mean, some of those ospreys, loons, whatever, they get really, really smart, right? Like, I'm sure you know of lakes in your area where if your rod even bends, or you know, you pretend like you got a fish on, those loons are diving, right?
Yeah, the loons are crazy. They've learned how to hunt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And they're not above taking advantage of a tired fish, especially if you're letting them go, right?
No.
That's always a trick, for sure. So let's talk about your tying, because I know you do sell patterns, and if somebody is coming up to your neck of the woods or just looking to pick up some flies, because we got listeners all over the place, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
You can message me on Instagram. That's probably the best way.
Okay.
It's just Scooby_1976.
Got it.
And find me on there. You know, I have my cabin rental page as well on Facebook, so people can get a hold of me there as well.
Well, let's talk about that. So you guys have a cabin on Roche Lake, and for those that don't know, it's a real hub of fly fishing in the Kamloops area, we'll call it. Beautiful, beautiful spot. You've got, what is it? It's a provincial park kind of surrounding the lake, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Hmm. So tell us about the cabin, and tell us about, you know, somebody wanted to rent it, whether it's winter season, like I'm sure you probably rent it for sledders too, but you tell me, what does that look like?
So the cabin, it is rented year round. You know, ice fishermen, sledders, snowshoers in the winter, obviously summertime, you know, we got our ATVers, our dirt bikers, and of course our fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
We bought the cabin in 2021 and pretty much gutted the whole main floor and did some really nice renos and updating in it. And now we kind of rent it out in between our time there.
Right.
You know, we try and do it so every time anybody is there, we're the next people that come. So, you know, we give it a good cleaning. We make sure, you know, there's no damage, stuff like that. And
yeah,
then it's ready for the next person.
Good stuff. First time I went up that neck of the woods, and we stayed at the cabins up there a few times, but it was John Kent was there actually running the resort at that point. I forget what year that was, but another legendary kind of tire in your neck of the woods. Man, there's a lot of them come through there, right?
Yeah, there's, you know, it's crazy, and some of them are just so good. Like, I look at a ton of those patterns some of them do, and they're just, they're beautiful. Like, yeah. I don't know how they get them so nice.
Well, and some of them are like, I find they're almost too good. I know that sounds funny, but it's like, the thing I love about John's patterns is I know they work. They all work. You know what I mean? It's like, I look at them, they sink like a rock as chronomids, and they stay together. Some of these ones with the fancy wing buds and that, I don't know how durable some of them are once you get into a few fish, especially on your lake there. But
yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't progressed into tying the wing buds yet. I don't know if it's really necessary. And
that's the million-dollar question. Is it necessary?
Yeah, I think the big thing is just, you know, I use the tungsten beads to keep the weight up, and, you know, a good coat of glue when you're done, just so that they sink quick and they're not taking on air, and down they go.
Chad, let's talk about your setup. So say you're fishing chironomids on the still. What are you using swivels on top of those beads as well, or what does that look like?
So I like going from my fly line down with just some carbon. I do use a swivel, especially when, you know, you're over 6 or 7 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it helps everything get down quicker. When it's windy, it can be a little bit tricky because you always seem to catch that swivel on stuff, but mm-hmm. it definitely helps, I think.
And strike indicator, or what do you?
Yeah. Yeah, strike indicator for sure.
Teardrop shaped or round?
I like the teardrop shape, actually.
Yeah, me too. Chartreuse, orange, what color?
I go around, you know, sometimes I even run the dark green ones.
Yeah.
I know they're a little hard to see at times, but I don't really pick a color for a certain day. It's just whatever comes out of the box. I have all the colors and just go with it.
Sometimes I get superstitious and I'll look around and see who's bobber down. And if it's a chartreuse one, I might go to that. I don't know. That's a weird thing that I do, but,
can't say I've ever done that.
I find a lot of people fish the orange. But I kind of like, it depends on the light, right? And there's so many variables if it's cloudy and whatnot, but yeah, I don't know. I often think the indicator, how many times have you had a fish swirl on your indie? Like that seems to happen a lot too.
It seems to happen more on the orange ones, actually.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot of times I'll run two different color ones if I've got the two rods out. Just kind of then you know which one's which.
Are you double anchored in that boat of yours?
Yeah, I do for sure.
Yeah. And 10-foot rod, 9.5?
9.5. Yeah. I tried a 10-foot and I just didn't see the benefit of it. So I've just been going with the 9.5. It's easier to store them, easier to get them down to the lake, just everything about them.
Yeah, definitely easier to store. It's hard to find rod cases sometimes that take the, because I got one of those 10-foot, 10-4 from one of Trevor's rods there, the linear.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. But long is nice, though, eh? Like for the, when you're casting into a wind, let's say you're out on stump and that wind's kicking up, that extra 6, you know, 10 inches on a rod can really help. But, yeah. So what's your season looking like this year? You got any big trips planned, or is it a lot of time on your home water? What's coming down the pipe this year?
I think we're just going to concentrate, you know, Roche and around Roche this year. After the winter kill last year, we started hitting, you know, a lot of the little lakes around.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some good days. We had some not so good days. But there's so many there to explore and so much to learn that it's hard to really go anywhere else when we have all that.
Yeah, no, for sure. If you're surrounded by that many good waters, and let's face it, Kamloops area is world famous for its stillwater fly fishing. And I think sometimes we don't realize how lucky we actually are. Because tell me about this. You get a little further south. Well, you're in Kelowna for the most part, but you get south of Kelowna and the lakes, you know, there's a lot less of them. And they're fewer and far between. It's pretty dry down here. But that Kamloops area, there's literally hundreds of lakes between, you know. Let's see.
Yeah, it's like,
what's that north of Kamloops there? What's that town? Like Barrier, kind of say between Barrier and Merritt. It's like crazy.
Yeah, and then even up onto Highway 24 and all that into the Caribou, there's so many lakes up that way as well.
Yeah, for sure. So if somebody wants to talk cabin rentals with you or talk fly patterns, is it Instagram or Facebook again? Remind me, best place to find
you. So for the cabin, best place is Facebook. It's just Cabin Rental at Roche. Plug that in, my cabin page will come up.
Perfect.
And that's, you know, I can do tying flies on there. I can, you know, rent you the cabin, whatever anybody really wants. Even if just people want to chat, you know, ask how the fishing is, ask, you know, what's happening. I gladly give them all the info I can.
Love it. Chad, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us tonight, and hopefully we'll see you and share a shoal at some point in the future.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, you know what I never asked you? I got to ask you this before I let you go. Scooby, the nickname, where's this coming from? Scooby Kona. Because when I saw that, I'm like, I didn't realize your name was Chad. It took me a while to find your actual name.
Yeah, so Kona's my dog. You know, she's Shepherd Cross. She's my fishing partner.
Yeah.
So it was just, I had to have her name in there. Just she's special. Love and it. Then Scooby was just, you know, a nickname out of high school. When I first went out subcontracting, I needed a name for a company. And so I thought, well, I'll just use my nickname. And then it kind of stuck. People started to know me by that, and we just went with it. So it kind of, the company brought it on, and now everybody just calls me Scoob or Scoobs, and that's kind of where it went.
I love it. If you're looking for any masonry work in the Kelowna in the interior area of BC, Scooby's Masonry, look him up. That's Chad Ivan out of Kelowna. Avid fly fisher, fly tire, has a beauty cabin on Roche Lake. Thanks so much, folks, for joining us this time around. We'll catch you next time.
The Fly Fishing 97 podcast is brought to you by theflycrate.com. Thank you for listening to the Fly Fishing 97 podcast. Your feedback matters. Let us know if there's a person or topic you'd like discussed. Email us at mark@flyfishing97.com. Until next time, tight lines, and we'll see you on the water.